put your website to work while you play. A website works 24/7, so no matter where you are or what you're doing, people can still find you online. Start building your website today at GoDaddy.com. It starts with a .com domain. Enter promo code 199MYLF, that's 199MILF, at checkout to get your .com for just $1.99. Some limitations apply. See website for details. I'm Sophie Venable, and welcome to MILF Talk, Make Your Life Fabulous. We like to talk about anything here, from parenting and money issues to sex and dating, just life in general. We try to keep it fun. I hope that listening will not only entertain you, but maybe help you a little bit along the way. I'm a psychologist and a life coach, mother of two, and author of MILF 101, Make Your Life Fabulous. I am passionate about helping people live authentic, joyful lives, so if you want to ever write to me and ask me an advice question, you can find me at makeyourlifefabulous@gmail.com. And you can also find me on Facebook at Sophie Venable or tweet me at MILF Talk. So there's all kinds of ways to get in touch with me. So please do, because I'm happy to answer your questions anytime. So I have somebody new in the peanut gallery today.
Yay!
And her name is Maria Spertolozzi.
Yes.
And she is a mere 21 years old. Just a youngin', like fresh face,
so tiny,
new to life, all new parts. And actually, she had a very funny, we were talking about Santa Claus a couple weeks ago, and you're going to have to share this story because we were talking about, you know, having to like break the news to your kids and, you know, times when they get a little bit suspicious and all that stuff. So you have to when you started to get suspicious.
Well, I got suspicious. One of my friends had sort of tipped me off that like maybe there was something funny going on. And so I told my parents and they're like, no, no, no. What are you talking about? You're totally nuts. Right. Like
that's
Santa's
crazy.
So real. Right. I don't know what you think.
Right. You think we can afford these presents?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Come on.
And so that year at Christmas, I was like, well, do we have any cookies? Like, we should leave Santa some cookies. And my dad was like, no, I think this year Santa wants a beer and a stuffed shell, like an Italian stuffed shell, because that's what we'd had for Christmas dinner.
Leftovers.
Yeah.
Santa wants leftovers.
Santa wants your leftovers.
That's a new tradition.
And I was like, oh, okay, that makes perfect sense. Like, he breaks up the monotony of the milk
right,
and cookies.
Right. You know, because he needs a little something to wash it all
down
with. Needs a beer so he can drive that sled drunk.
And then years later, when I finally like came to terms with, you know, Santa's not entirely real.
Right.
I was like, God damn it, Dad. Like, you just did that because you wanted me to leave a beer out for you. So when I went to bed, you could keep drinking.
I think that's so adorable that it took you a while to figure that out.
Like years to figure
really,
it out.
Really cute. And I like that you said Santa's not totally real.
Cause Santa's still real.
Damn it, I'm holding the line. I believe in Santa. Damn it. So yes, well, thank you. I think that's awesome. I love that story. No, I had to break the news to my kid on her 11th birthday, basically because she insisted. She insisted that I wreck her world.
Some kids do that.
She was just like, no, like you have to stop lying to me right now. And so then I told her the truth, and it was. Wow. I mean, it was traumatic.
It's more than they can handle a lot of times.
She so did not want that answer. It was rough. And I said it before. It was that damn elf. Because the elf didn't show up on her birthday. Yeah. The elf on the shelf. It's just like ruining everything. Because it's making kids like, well, if the elf's not real and you didn't move the elf. Then they start
to ask all the technical questions.
Exactly.
That's the other thing.
How does he go to the North Pole and back and blah, blah, blah.
I kept asking. I asked my parents for pictures of Santa for pictures of the North Pole once. And my mom was just like, how the fuck am I supposed to get these?
Yeah, she didn't really have the Google Images thing down.
Well, it was slightly before.
Just
so
right
she had
before.
To like.
I mean, people could really pull a fast on their kids right now.
Photoshop,
if they wanted to. Psh, no problem. You got Santa in your own living room. You got the whole thing. That's like easy. Yeah, you could really pull it off. So I'm so glad you're doing this with me today, because actually, what I want to talk about is life purpose.
All right.
And you are like half my age. Wow. God, I got to sit with that for a minute. Hold on. And but it's not just people your age that are like, why am I here? What's my life purpose? What am I supposed to be doing with my time? It's, you know, people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, they, you know, I get these kinds of questions all the time. And, you know, the sort of, and not just the questions, but the concern that you might not be living your life right.
Yeah, that you're doing something wrong because you're not happy or you're not doing X, Y, Z.
Right. Yeah, or yeah, like I'm on the wrong path. I'm on the wrong, you know, I'm wasting my time, or maybe everything I'm doing now won't matter. Like those kinds of things. And I thought Mark Manson's like, he's one of my favorite bloggers. He's out there in the great World Wide Web. And I came across this article that he wrote called Seven Strange Questions That Help You Find Your Life Purpose. And I really liked it, and I really connected with it because what he was saying wasn't so much that everything, that your life as a whole has to be meaningful, but that what you're really asking is how I'm spending my time.
Yeah.
Worthwhile, you know, yeah. Like, and because that's really the question, because sometimes sitting around doing nothing is a great way to spend your time. You know, you're sitting around talking to friends, you're connecting. It's all about that, you know, because I think sometimes, you know, I mean, I really, if my life ended tomorrow, I know that I've spent a good chunk of my life really connecting with people.
Yeah.
Really like loving the people that I love. Right.
And no, and that's really important for a lot of, like, some people that might not be as important. They might just want the tangible, I made this much money, I did this right. thing, I got this award.
Right.
But for a lot of us, it's, you know, I connected with the people I love, they know I love them, I know that we share this relationship, and that's important to me.
And where do you think you learned that at 21, when you're supposed to be, like, worried about getting a degree and going to college and making sure that you can pay your rent and, you know?
Well, I definitely learned it from my parents, who both of them switched careers multiple times.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So my dad originally went to seminary. And dropped out after 2 years because he wasn't sure he wanted to go down that path. Moved to New Orleans, got a job at the nuclear plant, met my mom. I know, wow. I know.
Boy, that's a well, first of all, just moving to New Orleans after you've gone through seminary. Like,
there's a lot going on.
My brain is blown, yes.
Met my mom. They moved to Houston together, and then they moved back to Boston, where I was born.
Okay.
My mom went to school for music, then horticulture, stuck with that for 15 years, then got a degree in computer engineering and has been a computer engineer for like 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So
who would that's very interesting that she would go from music and horticulture to computer engineering.
Northeastern had a really great program geared toward women to get into computer engineering.
Awesome.
Because it was there weren't any women in computer engineering in the early 90s.
I just went to my kids' back to school night, and the computer teacher was like, you realize there's going to be like three jobs for every person in the computer world. Like, this is a really good, if your kids like it, you should definitely encourage
push them
because
yeah.
there's, you know, there's kids right out of college getting $90,000 a year jobs, like, you know, even before they graduate.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, you know, and I thought, I wish I was into computers. But you look at your mom, like,
yeah.
Who knows, maybe 5 years from now, I'll be like, I totally want to be a computer engineer.
So when I was growing up, they always encouraged me to sort of just do whatever made me happiest.
Cool.
And to embrace that side of me, I went to drama camp for a lot of summers. I drew a lot, sometimes on the walls, but...
Rotten kid. But look at you. Like,
yeah,
you have a job.
I have a job.
You have a job. You're motivated.
I'm motivated. Well, and I kept true to myself. And that was another thing that my parents really encouraged. You know, they let me draw on my clothes. They let me dye my hair silly colors.
I was
going to
say, they let you dye your hair pink.
Oh, my mom dyes her hair pink now.
I've thought about doing a little blue streak. Just for fun.
It's fun. It's fun. But I feel like that really helped me come to terms with who I was before I thought of, okay, well, I need a career and I need a job and I need to figure out how to be an adult. And all of that stuff came second because I knew who I was first.
Which I think makes you much more adaptable in the world, which I think is really required of your generation.
Yeah.
And mine, frankly, is we really have to be adaptable and know who we are. It's interesting when huge like stocks companies will hire and pay well a philosophy major.
Yeah.
You know, because what they're really
trying to do is acquire people that think outside the box and that can and that are adaptable and that are looking at things more from a human behavior standpoint,
yeah,
right?
As opposed to from their money standpoint.
Because that's what's connecting to people in the world. That seems to be, hopefully, the way we're going. Hopefully.
So cross your fingers.
But what's interesting, and I think I'm kind of fascinated by your generation, because I would imagine you've got some people you could call out on this little issue here, is his first question, because he likes to, you know, phrase things in sort of a way that makes you think, is what's your favorite flavor of shit sandwich, and does it come with an olive? And I probably wouldn't say olive. I'd probably say side of fries, because I don't like olives. But the point being that anything you do is going to have a downside.
You
know, like, you're going to have to work 90 hours a week if you want to be a lawyer. You're going to have to go to school for 8 years if you want to be a doctor. You're going to deal with shitty people a lot of times if you want to be, like, out in the world dealing with the public. You want to be an artist, you're going to fail a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
So I went to Emerson College,
okay,
where I would say 90% of our majors are more geared towards arts. Acting majors, musical theater.
Yeah.
I think 75% of our college is film majors.
Wow.
Yeah. So everyone there comes out with the mentality of, I have to pay my dues. I have to do all this shit so that I can get to what I actually want.
Right.
And it's a really, I feel like it's a good mentality for my generation to have, mm-hmm, because a lot of people keep giving us shit because they're like, well, you're lazy and you don't know how to do this. Mm-hmm. And like, you don't want to pay your dues. We do. You're just not letting us is the biggest problem, because they think we're all lazy, but really we're just doing things differently than the people hiring us.
Right. And you have to.
Yeah.
And I think some of the people hiring are catching on.
Some of the people hiring are definitely catching on, and they're more open to people like my age, or I would say even 5 years older.
Right.
And they're more open to hearing the suggestions and just the general like vibe that we have.
Yeah, I never felt, you know, because I was a theater major at first, and then I just started working in theater, and I didn't go to school until I went back for psych, but I didn't, it barely even ever felt like paying my dues, because I just wanted to do it. That's all I wanted to do. And so I was willing to wait tables, choreograph a show, do a show for free, do a show for $150 a week. I'm not even kidding you, 8 performances a week for $150. And, you know, barely make my rent with 4 different jobs, like driving 500 miles a week. That was awesome.
I was like, you're doing what you love. You're doing what you want to do.
I'm so happy. Like, those are really happy years of my life.
Yeah.
You know, and I do know that there are a lot of people your age who are like really mad about that. Like, this is so hard, and I'm so tired, and life is so shitty, and and it's like, dude, this is just what you do.
this is how it goes.
This is life. This is how it goes. Just keep going. And that's why it's so cool that your parents were like, do what you want to do, because guess what? You're going to eat some shit sandwiches.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, and when I read it, I thought of, I have multiple tattoos, and the way I think of tattoos that I want to get is, I think, okay, you're going to have to sit there for however many hours, however long it takes, with needles jabbing into your skin. You have to want this. Like, you can't just go in on a whim, because this is going to hurt and it's going to suck.
Right.
And I feel like that's similar to what kind of shit sandwich do you want to eat? Like, you just have to pick what you feel so strongly about that you don't care how much shit you have to take.
Right.
You're going to do it.
You just want it.
Yeah.
You just want it. And because nothing is more powerful than the actual wanting.
Exactly.
Like, and that's what I think, when parents' egos get in the way, they want their kids to want certain things. And if there's one thing, you know, doctors will say, like, you can't control what goes in their mouths, or like what comes out of them, or what, you can't make them poop or whatever, you know. It's like, you also can't really make them want.
Yeah.
You can encourage them. You can expose them to certain things, but the truth is, your kids are going to have whatever dreams they're going to have.
Yeah.
And like, you can kind of sit back and watch the show and go, like, that's really cool. Let me kind of, you know, support you in any way I can. But, you know, there's a lot of artist parents who do not encourage their children to be artists, because it's hard.
Yeah, and they don't want their kids to struggle like that.
You don't think it's hard to be a doctor or a lawyer or a CPA?
Yeah, it's not easy to be an investment broker.
Exactly. That's not easy either, and there's plenty of failure. Like, it's, oh, I mean, it's nothing is going to be
it. Nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah, nothing's guaranteed. Nothing's going to be a cakewalk. So you're not that far past 8 years old, but we're going to ask this question. What is true about you today that would make your 8-year old self cry? I knew the answer to this right away because I grew up as a dancer. I was danced from the time that I could walk. And after I quit theater and I went back to school, I also, you know, got married, bought a house, had a baby, blah, blah, blah. And the next thing I knew, I hadn't danced in like 10 or 12 years. Because it was, you know, I tried. I went back to a jazz class or ballet class. So painful. Just like, yeah. Oh, my God. I had no idea what I used to be able to do. I mean, really. Because I did it since I could walk. So
oh, yeah. So it was second nature until.
I had no idea. Like, I used to think I wasn't an athlete. I used to think, oh, my God. So anyway. But that made me really sad. And I didn't really realize how sad it was making me until it was kind of catching up with me. And a friend of mine said she had taken a dance lesson, and this is a friend who's like 10 or 15 years older than me, and I was like, well, what do you mean? You know, she's like, well, I just danced with a handsome man for 45 minutes. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, I just took a ballroom lesson. I was like, what? And it was like I was born again. It really was like I went and I danced and I just thought, oh my God, it literally woke up my soul, you know, and it's probably, I mean, I've done a lot of dumb shit in my life, but that is probably my only regret is that I allowed myself to not dance for 10 or 12 years.
Yeah.
And so if I were to, I mean, I've been dancing solid, I swear to God, for like 10 years now in ballroom. And that was 10 years ago that I kind of figured that out. I've been doing ballroom for 10 years this month. And, I'm so glad because I do know that if I was older and had to look back and say like I never danced again after I was 23, that would make
it would
me
be upsetting.
Really
yeah.
sad, really sad. Yeah. So far you doing? I mean, you're not so far out of 8.
I'm not that far out of 8. But I thought back to myself at 8, and he in the article used examples of writing, mm-hmm. and that's my MO. I want to be a writer who is published in Vanity Fair one day, which is really difficult. But I'm writing
goals.
I'm writing as much as I can now because I know that if I stop writing, that's the end of it. It's never
right.
going to happen.
That's right.
But then
you got to write a lot of shit to get to the good stuff.
And that's the other thing. I write so many different kinds of things just to sort of stretch all the different muscles. But then I thought of, I did Taekwondo for 12 years from 5 until senior year of high school. Mm-hmm. And then I quit cause I went to college and I got really busy. And I picked it up last summer for about 6 months. Until I finished college and I moved out to Los Angeles. And now my life has just been
it's
a mess. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And every day, every time I get angry, I just wish that I could go back. I just wish that I had that place. That, right. And it wasn't even just the physical acts. It was the mentality and
the space, the discipline.
Everything about it. And if 8-year-old me saw the 8-year-old me who was a red belt at the time saw that I wasn't there, she would be really upset.
Yeah. I think that's a good question then.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. See? So you'll be signing up for Taekwondo next week?
Once I move, that's the whole thing is I'm changing apartments. So once I get into the new place and figure out the lay of the land.
Right. Right. Well, it's funny. I almost want to go out of order because actually one of the other questions is, if you had to leave your house all day, every day, where would you go? Like, and you can't be like a coffee shop, and like, you know, shit like that. And you can't go like just, you know, to a coffee shop and be on Facebook because you already do that. So, and I actually thought, well, I guess I would go to the yoga studio and the dance studio. That's probably what I would do. Especially the dance studio because it's really social and fun and friendly and there's music and dancing.
There's much more opportunity to be social than
really
in yoga.
Really joyful place. Like I could hang out there all day. And kind of that question actually made me think, you know, cause it's not that I haven't thought this before, but it really made me go, gosh, you know, you probably are going to retire as a dance, like,
yeah,
like retire into dance, like teaching dance. Like that's probably what you're going to do. You know, when you're done with all this shit, you're going to go and just teach dance because you just want to be around it.
Yeah.
This is where I want to be.
You want to surround yourself by that every day.
You know, so Taekwondo studio.
Taekwondo studio. Or I, one day when I was unemployed, I went to the Getty And I sat outside with my laptop and I wrote for 3 hours just solidly. And it was it was great. Everything I wrote was great. I felt great. It was wonderful because I'm from Boston where you can't just go outside and sit any time of the year. You know, like it's 12 degrees occasionally or it's raining every week.
Yeah. So you got to go out and just be in the beauty of it all.
And just be in the beauty of the Getty Center. And I thought I would do that for like the morning. And then I would just go hang out at the Taekwondo school. And then I would go home and make dinner. And like that would be the perfect life. It would be great. Yeah.
You know what's shameful? I haven't been to the New Getty.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I need to just be a tourist one day, you know, in my own town and just do that.
Sometimes, especially when you've lived somewhere so long, you forget that there's all this beautiful stuff.
I buy it all the time. And I was, God, I'm such a loser. I haven't been there. I know. So, yeah, that's, I think that's a really interesting question. I like that one.
No, I really like that question.
That really made me think. And then one of my favorites also is, what do you do that makes you forget to eat and poop?
I love that one.
And this is something, I actually talk about this in my book too, which is, you know, feeding your soul, getting into a flow experience, things like that. Because these are the things that you have done. I actually took a whole class on it, come to think of it, in college. It was called leisure. It was a leisure studies class. Did you ever hear of leisure studies?
No.
Okay, but really, and I thought, what the hell is this class going to be? You know, but it satisfied a requirement. It was at a good time. It was one of the best classes. It was so fun, and it was all about flow experience and sort of the history of and the importance of being creative, being playful, doing anything that makes you lose track of time. And that's what they refer to a flow experience. I had to interview somebody in my family, like about their lives. I interviewed my dad about like what he used to do for fun and his time in the army and like when he played music and because my dad was in a band, he's a musician. Actually, he had his own big band for a while, and so it was fascinating. And it just sort of it got me in touch with the idea that this is a human need. Essentially, we crave it. We seek it, you know. And some people combine adrenaline with it.
Yeah,
they need to, you know, because they're unable to allow themselves to just sit and draw or play with some Crayola watercolors and just kind of get lost in it. You know, I have a friend who's an art therapist who people will pay for a session just to come in and have that space to allow themselves to just sit. Sometimes they don't even talk to her. They're just like, I'm just here to paint. Oh, okay. You know.
Well, that's that. So, to me, that's
the writing. Yeah, you got to write.
And one of the most difficult things is getting inspired like that.
Yeah.
Where you just lose track of time and you just forget that there are other things you had to do and that, you know, oh, dinner was an hour ago or I've had to go to the bathroom for like 45 minutes.
Right. I think it's interesting. I mean, I know that you're probably familiar with... Oh my God, big, gigantic, thick, famous book about writing. You have to do morning pages and The Artist's Way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, The Artist's Way. One of the things that she suggests is that every morning you get up and write, like whether you're inspired or not, and you just write a bunch of shit and you just write anything. And there is something to be said for that. And I remember being at a composer's symposium thing with Danny Elfman, who said, you know, one of the composers asked, like, well, what if you just can't come up with a theme or your theme isn't good enough or whatever? And he was like, well, you have a time limit, so sometimes you just got to work with what you've got.
Yeah.
You just have to make it work. Make it work, people.
You just basically paper and go with it.
He was, what's his name? Ted Gunn?
Tim Gunn.
Tim Gunn, yeah. He was totally Tim Gunn about it. He's like, you just got to fucking plow through and make it work. Like, you got to work with what you have. And so it's interesting because sometimes you'll sit down and you'll be kind of white knuckling it, grinding your teeth through trying to write, be creative, whatever. And then sometimes you'll click over into that flow experience, right? And sometimes you just never do.
And yeah,
you're like, all right, I did a half an hour, I'm good.
There were many a college essay you just had to sit down and get through.
Grind it out.
Because you had to, and that was it. There was no other choice.
You know, sometimes I will actually use that as a way to get me to finish something I'm writing, is I'll be like, look, you have a paper due. Like, just pretend you have a paper due.
Yeah, pretend you have a deadline.
Yeah, you just have to, like, and I would literally think of it like, no, you're in grad school and you got to finish this damn thing. You know, like, that's it. This is your doctoral thesis. Just finish the damn thing, you know? So you give yourself these little reasons. But then when you did, like, I actually did have a writing day where I wrote for 12 hours. and my ass hurt like crazy. I mean, it was, I mean, God, my what do you call your sits bones were like, ah, I'm standing up, sitting down. I mean, I couldn't stop. Like, yeah. I just was, you know, 12 hours. I had to like ditch my boyfriend. He's like, you're on a roll, huh? We're not going out. I'm like, yeah. I'm not going out. Sorry. And but it was so you have to go with it.
Yeah.
If
it strikes you, you have to flow with it, because if you stop yourself, you could be stopping
magic.
Glory. Yeah.
Magic. Inspiration. Yeah. So those are so anything. And sometimes people don't realize, like, you might be baking or something. It might be anything that just makes you kind of forget how much time has passed. That's a really important experience to notice. And again, like he says, it doesn't mean that that's what you have to do.
No.
Like, that's like you don't have to open a cupcake shop. But what is it about that? You're like putting together ingredients, you're creating, you know, like what is it in principle that's making that happen?
I really liked his example of video games, how he played hours and hours of video games, not because it was the video games itself, but it was because it was the getting better and leveling up and defeating things and making progress.
Yes.
And I really like that, because I play a lot of online games for the same reason, because I like to feel like I'm making progress.
Right. You get these little bits.
You won this level, you know, you get 3 stars or whatever.
Yeah, I got to 21 on Fling. Are you impressed? I deleted it. I'm going to make myself crazy with that game. I loved that piece of that principle, because not everybody wants to, you know, if you love baking, you don't necessarily want to do it
all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't want to be a dance teacher right now, but there's a lot of things about that, about encouraging people and helping them to, you know, find joy in their lives and better their lives. I mean, you just can't even believe, like, I could go on and on about what dance brings to people in their lives, social dancing. It's like, I could write a whole book on it, but people have done it and nobody buys them. So, I mean, you know, it's only exciting to the people living it, but honestly, it is an incredible thing. It's like, it's the human spirit all over the place. And so I have to kind of look at that and go, well, that's what I'm doing with this, and that's what I want to be doing. And when he said that, it just kind of clicked for me. I went, there is essentially the same principle there. So it's very, very well said. So anyhow, it's Mark Manson Love Fest today. So the other question is, how can you embarrass yourself better? And I'm really against this one, so can we switch? Can we skip
yeah,
it?
We no, can. No, I'm kidding.
No.
I'm kidding.
This is, you know, how can you, and again, I actually talk about this in Feed Your Soul in that chapter too. It really is about, don't, you know, not doing something that you've always wanted to do or that you enjoy because you might not be good at it.
Yeah. No, when I was in school, especially in like middle school, when everyone's the most awkward, I refused to raise my hand if I wasn't like 100% sure I knew the answer.
Right.
I couldn't be wrong. I didn't want that embarrassment, that pressure.
Yeah. It's hard.
It's hard.
I mean, you have to really, you know, I've had some pretty public fails in my life, but you know what? I realized like nobody cares.
Yeah. You're the one putting all this weight on it.
Right. They would actually look at it a different way. They'd be like, it's so amazing that you tried doing that. And it's like, but it didn't do anything.
Yeah. You know, I didn't do it well though.
You know, but I didn't do well, you know, but that's also something that I learned. It's funny. I mean, I don't want to blame everything on my mother, but on one hand, I do think that I got a message, and it was probably generational too, because we didn't have reality television, internet, all that stuff, where the everyday man became, you know, did great things and you got to see it. There was this sense of like, well, other people have that kind of success.
Yeah.
You know, like that doesn't, like that's kind of a long shot. You don't want that. Or if I did, even if I never really wanted to be a Broadway star, I just wanted to dance.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to get paid to dance. So that was like a big success for me. But my mom might say, but don't you want to be like a lawyer or a doctor or a harpist or a, like, you know, like yeah, play for the LA Philharmonic, or you wanted to, and it's like, it wasn't valid unless it was
this big thing
or like you got some sort of certificate for it or whatever. And yet she never gave me, like, I was a competitive ice skater. I didn't go to the Olympics or anything. She never gave me shit about that. She was always like, well, that was a great part of your life. And, you know, so I did get both messages, but at the same time, I think that I did always feel like I've had to kind of fight against that that feeling of going back into dance. Going back into dance when you're old is fucked up, man. It hurts. Like you can't do anything you used to do. And so I have to go in essentially as an artist, as a dancer, and not be as good as I want to be.
Yeah.
I'm just physically not. My leg
just can't do that right now.
Doesn't go that high anymore. It just doesn't. And I only have so many hours to work on.
Yeah, I'm doing that.
Right? Okay. So you have to like make these compromises. So I have to kind of go put myself out there with everything, the costumes, the commitment, the this, the that, whatever. And I'm only going to be as good as I can be. You know, like it's just going to, and nobody's asking me to be perfect. All they're happy about is that I'm having a good time doing it.
Yeah.
You know, but that's really hard to remember.
Well, and on the other side. When I went to drama camp, we had little workshop classes every day. And I signed up for the improv class because I thought,
terrifying.
Oh, my God, I thought it would be fun and it would be funny. And me and all my friends would do all this fun stuff.
How can you better embarrass yourself? Go to improv class. Yes,
seriously.
Pretty much. That's the answer.
Seriously. Right?
I did that, too.
And it was I had so much anxiety and I was so stressed out and I didn't want to do anything because I didn't want to look stupid, even though the entire point of it was that we were in a safe space where all of us looked stupid.
I know. But of course you're thinking, well, that girl doesn't
look
stupid.
Yeah, but like, they're really funny.
She's really funny and she's totally cute.
I don't know. I can't come up with stuff that fast. I don't know how to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really good. I actually did. I went and took a groundlings class post-divorce. It was part of my kind of like
get
that,
out there.
That and scuba diving were my like just fucking jump in, do it, you know. And it was great. I really had a good time, but it was terrifying. I mean, it was like jumping out of an airplane every week. I'd show up, I'd just be like, I can't believe I'm doing this. And I think I've grown up as a performer, but improv is
it's a whole
different ball game, and it is hard.
It's got totally different rules. But then when I went back to Taekwondo, that same anxiety was there that like, oh, everyone's going to judge me. They're all going to think you're bad at this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all going to be bad. And even though I had been a black belt before and I was going in, I knew what I was doing. Right. I was still so concerned that I was going to embarrass myself somehow.
And then probably everybody after class was like, so how'd it go?
Yeah, they were like, oh, you're doing really good.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, oh, no problem.
Yeah.
I know.
Everyone was perfectly nice. They like invited me to things. It was great. But I just, in my mind.
Guess I didn't suck that bad.
Well, it's also because I didn't know anyone. Right? So I didn't have that comfort.
Really, it is. And, you know, and I've known people who've like, you know, picked up the guitar and you know, they practice and they just kind of suck, you know, and then like a year later, they're the life of the party playing.
Yeah,
songs
they're doing
and
really
a good
well.
Time. And it's like, you know, oh, you're going to be in a band? No, I just like to play. And it's like, God, that's so smart. It's a good reminder. You know, you just have to do things for the sake of doing them.
Yeah.
Not because you get a certificate or a degree or because it's going to lead to something. But sometimes, you know, you want to just like, I totally want to learn to play the ukulele.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
No, well, and I feel like my generation has a big problem with stuff like that because they're mm-hmm. like, but no one's going to give me an award. No one recognizes right. that I'm doing this because we were brought up in the, everyone is special. You're all your own snowflake, that kind. And so now everyone's like, but I got a job. Shouldn't you all throw me a party?
Right.
Yeah, which is not how the world works.
No, it's not how the world works. And I guess that's the hard thing. That's the hard lesson for your generation is like, yeah, you're going to work hard. You're going to be tired. You're going to have four jobs. You're going to do this. You're going to drive a lot. You're going to be stressed. You're going to get sick. You're going to have to take yourself to the doctor. You're going to have to do all these grown-up things. And nobody is really going to
recognize it because it's your life.
Because it's just your life
that's
that
just
you have
what
to
happens.
Walk through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why you want to be spending your time doing things that are meaningful to you, right? And that's sort of this whole thing. It's like it doesn't, you might, the arc of your life might not be that you do this one thing that is your life purpose your whole life, but that if you continually spend your time doing things that are meaningful to you in some way,
yeah,
whether it's your job or whether it's just your joy or whether it's just your relationships, whether you're pushing yourself out of your comfort zone a little bit, you know, these are excellent ways to spend your time here as opposed to sitting on the couch, you
just
know,
watching hours of television for no purpose.
Eating ice cream. Yeah. Yeah. So here, this is a challenging one. He's like, how are you going to save the world? Right? This is a challenging one because, believe me, I mean, I think about it all the time. I couldn't get out of bed for 2 weeks when the bees were dying, and I know they're still dying. I know it's still a problem. But I've never felt myself in like an actual physical depression until the bees were dying and I watched Al Gore's movie. It was bad. It was really, really bad.
Yeah.
And I had little babies. I was like, the world is like, it was terrible. So, and I still feel that way. But I actually found a website called the Good News Network, and it pulled me out. Because it was like, oh, they're cleaning up a river in China, and there, this boy saved this old man from a speeding train, and it was like, oh, yes,
oh that's
right.
Great,
yeah. And so you have to remember, like every day, most of the time, people stop at stoplights, and there's a whole lot of cooperation that goes on, like all the time. But this is an interesting question, you know, and it's not necessarily that you have to like go into interior design with only recyclable goods. It just means how are you going to contribute?
What are you giving back to the world?
Right. What are you giving back? And you know, I suppose that, you know, raising well-adjusted little humans to continue the world, that's definitely
definitely
contributing.
Giving back to the world.
Right, right. Because my kids are pretty motivated to help, you know, to be like, well, you know, maybe go into architecture or something.
Yeah.
You know, where that could
You can do that.
Yeah. So... but that's a challenging question,
it's
I think,
hard.
Because it's hard not to be just completely self-centered.
Well, and it's hard too, especially like my generation. I read once that we actually give back more than most generations before us because we are so aware of all the issues that are facing the world right now. And I think, and I've given to a bunch of different charities. I was in Boston when the marathon bombing happened. I supported the One Fund. I, you know, went out and did all this stuff. And I'm really pushing for the day when I get a garage and I can buy a diesel car and convert it to run on vegetable oil. That's my dream. That is one of my dreams in life. And everyone laughs at me because they think I'm such a hippie. But I think it'd be such a great, such a simple way to just give back to the world is by lowering my own CO2 emissions.
I think it's awesome.
But you need
I love beef and I eat it once in a while, but I pretty much treat it as a treat because... It takes 2,500 gallons of water to make 1 pound of beef. So I'm like, skip a few burgers and enjoy your shower. Like,
exactly.
Because it's not about the showering. It's about the agriculture, right? So I think that you can look at your own values and you can say you can't do everything.
No,
right?
And you shouldn't.
But you can look at, you know, well, no, and that's why I think that I felt really powerless and did get depressed when I was dealing with that because, and it seems like it's so silly, but I have to say, I will remember it for the rest of my life. I barely could get out of bed and I just thought, holy shit, what is happening with me? And it was because I felt really powerless and really hopeless and really sad about the world. And that's not really generally who I am.
Yeah.
And so kind of just finding something to flip the switch going the other way made me think, okay, you know, do what you can, whenever you can.
Whatever little step you can take.
It's all, it all helps, you know, it's sort of the pebbles and, you know.
No, I'm especially since we live in Los Angeles and we're in this serious, serious drought. Yeah. I try to conserve as much water as possible.
Yes.
My boyfriend, we grew up in New England where we might have a drought once a year, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. So he just like
God,
faucets running.
You're not a Patriots fan, are you?
I'm, me and sports are not the best of friends.
Good. Good. That's fine then. We're good.
But so he, you know, the other day he was brushing his teeth and he left the sink running and I was like, dude, just turn off the water. Like I just yell at him all the time because I'm like, there are just these little things and you don't think they mean a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, they could change something.
Yes. If everybody was a little bit more.
Yeah.
Aware, it could
if everyone tried a little harder.
And so I think that if you're contributing in some way, whether it's, you know, your carbon footprint or whether it's spreading awareness or whether it's, you know, just spreading love and raising good kids, anything that you could do with your day, with your time, that because it might seem like, how am I going to change the world by volunteering one time at this shelter or this food bank or by, you know, donating to this drive? But But I really believe that that energy begets more of that energy.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's certainly more helpful than the opposite.
Yeah.
Right? So it's literally sort of the old fashioned idea of goodwill, you know, like spread goodwill. If nothing else,
pay it forward, yes, if you will.
If you will, yes. I got to see that movie again.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. They showed it to us almost every year in school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. I love that. What school?
First in my public middle school and then in Catholic high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they showed it to us before Thanksgiving on like that half day Wednesday when you don't do anything anyway.
That's so great.
So we just watched Pay It Forward.
They just keep showing Nemo at my kids. I'm like, what the fuck? That's like Ransom for Kids.
Oh, they showed us
a stressful movie.
They showed us National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation 1 year. And we were all like so confused like, as to what was happening.
What's going on? No, that's awesome.
Pay It Forward. It was
great. That's genius. Okay, so this can be a depressing question, but I do think it's a really good question. And I actually got really existential a couple weekends ago when I was, whenever I fly, I get really weird because like I'm always, you know, sending my sister or my friends some like, you know, email will.
Yeah.
Like, so-and-so gets this
case.
And you get this and the follow my, you know, just like, I can't help it because, you know, you're in a metal tube, whatever. But it always makes me think like, how would I feel about, you know, how do I feel about it if this is it? Right.
Yeah.
You know, and how do I feel about my legacy? And so this question is, if you knew you were going to die 1 year from today, what would you do and how would you want to be remembered? Which is really, I think, an excellent question and something that I've asked myself an awful lot in the last few years. Because when you get to my age, young lady, you end up going to a lot of funerals. Okay, I went to a lot of funerals in 2012 and 13. This year, it's been a rough few years. You know, you start losing parents, friends' parents, yeah. Even friends. And you go to enough funerals and the only thing people talk about, I swear to you, is how kind you were.
Yeah.
And how well you listened. I mean, honestly, like that.
No.
And they might, you know, they might talk about how funny you were or whatever, but nobody is talking really about what you did for a living. You know, unless it was something that like really gave back to people or whatever, or brought you a lot of joy or something like that. But again, it's about your trail of joy, essentially. Like, that's what people talk about.
Well, and that's what you want to remember. And like,
what if you don't do it? Like, what if nobody's got anything good to say? Then they'll start talking about your career.
You know, when they've run out of the short little, oh, they were so nice that time. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, when I was a freshman in high school, my uncle died. And we had a funeral and the typical Catholic thing. And then he lived in Puerto Rico for the last like 15 years of his life. So that winter, that side of the family, not all of us, but almost all of us, so 18 of us, went down to Puerto Rico to have a memorial for him. And all we did was tell stories about how great he was and what he did in his life and how he was just this ray of sunshine. And it was really nice, and it got me thinking about what you want to remember when someone dies and what I would want people to remember when I die. And it's always that I was loyal and that, you know, I cared about them and that I tried my hardest and that I was passionate and not, you know, whatever I did as a job or like whatever grades I got in college or all the nitpicky things that you worry about so much when you're living them.
Yeah, and it's really, I think it's this kind of wonderful gift to have that experience when you do, I mean, unfortunately lose someone that is special in the family. I do think sometimes that's what those, we talked a lot about grief in an episode that Todd and I did a few weeks ago. And that is another part of the beauty of those traditions is that you do get to hear the stories. And it does, I think it also kind of, you know, spreads that idea that, think about how you're going to be remembered and think about, you know, what you want your legacy to be. And my feeling, if I had to put it very simply, is that love is your legacy.
Yeah.
That is your legacy, like it or not. So you better pump some out there, man. because that is really what is, I think, going to affect your loved ones, your inner circle, the further circle, the world, you know, possibly into the next lifetime if there is one, right? Because that's what we're, you know, we're just spreading this energy. I mean, I'm getting all metaphysical on it. But really, if you want, if people want to be immortal, they want to last beyond their lives. Well, that feeling that you give somebody when you're a loving person, the people that have touched my life that are gone, I still feel loving feelings when I think of them, you know, and that's kind of like being immortal, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
people still remember you.
They remember you and it evokes a certain emotion to think of you. And I kind of want that emotion to be a positive one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and as a writer, people always tell you that, you know, since you're a writer, you're always immortal because all of your writing lives on, which to a degree,
your art and all those things.
All of that stuff lives on. But I don't really care if the physical thing lives on. If what I wrote affected someone, I want them to remember that it affected them and how they felt.
Right.
Because, you know, the internet could die tomorrow and then half the things I've written are gone forever. But if someone meets me in 10 years... Oh, I have learned that. I learned that the hard way.
I'm kidding. Sorry.
But, you know, no one can access it unless I give it to them or something.
Right.
And they've read something and they meet me and they're like, oh, you wrote this great thing. I really cared about it. Like, that's what you want.
No, that's an amazing feeling. I've had a few people genuinely say, like, reading this book really helped my life and thank you. And it's like, wow, what do I do with that? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best feeling in the whole world, you know? So it's, and that, you know, that's, but I still think that's part of your, again, that is what he's asking is like, what do you want your legacy to be? So, you know, yeah, it is beyond love and a feeling and all of that. If that's what you want to leave behind works of art, whatever it is that, that evokes emotion in people on some level, and that's a valid desire,
you know,
to say like, well, that's what I want my legacy to be, so you better get on it, right?
Do
like,
that.
What if you so you got to do that, and that's really the point. So I think it's I love that, you know, his overriding message is really that if you're living according to somebody else's values, then you're pretty much guaranteed that you're not living your, quote, life purpose, right?
Yeah.
But that if you can get really clear about what your values are, and that's kind of what these questions really help you with, right?
Yeah.
That's what these questions open the door to you really figuring out what it is that brings you joy, what it is that makes you lose time, makes you in the moment, what are you afraid to do?
Yeah.
Like things like that. Like, cause if you're afraid to do it, you probably really want to do it. And, you know, those are the purpose, I think, that these questions serve, and they really get you in touch with what your values are and how, and I think if you're in touch with that, then you're going to make choices and take steps that are going to lead you down the path of feeling like you have had a purposeful life, whatever that means to you.
Yeah. And I think it's very important to remember these questions, especially when coming up with big life decisions, like, should I move here? Should I accept this job? You know, things like that, because a lot of the times people get sidetracked by the technical stuff, the how much is it paying me? Is it close to this? Yeah. Is it convenient for this? And less about, you know,
the emotional cost,
the mental toll that it may take.
Right.
Just everything.
And those are also, they're intangible, but they're valid factors that need to be weighed in. And again, like you just said, these questions can really help you weigh that and take those into consideration. Like, oh, don't forget you want to think about this.
Yeah. Don't forget you really
because
enjoy
the truth
this.
Because if you're going to eat a shit sandwich, you want it to have a side of fries.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's a really, really good question to always consider. So thank you so much for being here today.
This
We're
is
actually
great.
Out of time. This was really fun. And you can find me on Facebook, Sophie Venable. You can find my book, MILF 101, on Amazon.com. And you can tweet me at MILF Talk. And thank you, Maria Spertolozzi, for being here. You give me hope for the future.
Good. I'm glad.
We got a good one here, folks. Thank you for listening. Bye.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, slicinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.